Good morning, everybody. It is great to be here one more time today. And my name is Gary Fowler, and I'm the CEO, President, and co-founder of GSD, Get Shit Done Venture Studios, premier AI and quantum venture studio, like it in the heart of Silicon Valley. In fact, I'm here right now today, and it's a little bit cold. I've been involved in 17 startups and several unicorns. I was on the original management team of Click Software, which was sold to Salesforce for $1.35 billion, and also Eva.ai, an HR tech company that I co-founded with Dr. David Yang. Today, I've had my incredible guest, Steve Agunro, who's a serial entrepreneur, graduated from the London School of Economics, has an incredible background, is involved in everything from the music industry to technology. With that, I'd like to bring Steve on board. Hey, Steve, how you doing today, man?
Hey, Gary, how you doing?
I'm doing better now. My system rebooted, and the cache that was in there didn't show my shows and things. It was kind of interesting, so I had to figure it out.
Trust me, I get it. It's funny. I was just thinking, it's cold out here in LA as well, man. You know, I was in Minneapolis for a couple of weeks with my kids, and it was freezing out there. You know, I thought I got to get back to LA. So I got back here, and I think I brought the cold to LA with me.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Steve, because the Atlantic current is changing direction, and because of the Gulf Stream being overheated. And the average temperatures in the US and Europe could go down 15 degrees Fahrenheit over a 10-year period of time. It's called the meridional shift. Huh. And I had, you know, been involved in climate forecasting and things. So this is not conspiracy theory. You know, the top labs are talking about it as early as 2025. So the things that we're seeing now is a preview of coming attractions. In fact, the last time it happened was 12,000 years ago, which was the Ice Age, actually. So it's very interesting. We talk about global warming. So global warming can actually make it cold, too. So on one side of it, the U.S. and Europe could be, will be colder. But on the other side, down the Amazon, it could be 15 to 30 degrees, Latin America, 15 to 30 degrees warmer. It's quite interesting.
Wow. You know? Okay.
And it's not like it hasn't happened before, but it's just it's happened a whole lot faster this time.
Okay. Yeah. This is interesting times. Hmm?
Okay. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And the thing is, we got to all band together. You know, we got to go down. All people from all over the world need to band together to help us solve these problems. Things like global warming, increasing the food supply. You know, by 2050, we're going to have to double the food supply. And we can't increase the number of cattle because 26% of the problems with pollution is methane gas from cows. We got to work together as a team. So anyhow, those are just some of my passions. But you got an amazing background, man. How in the hell where are you from originally and how did you get started?
I was born in Scotland, to African parents,
How was it there, Steve? You know, because I have my buddies that are from Scotland, and I'll tell you what, they tell me that it can be pretty rough in some of the places. Is it really? Culture or what?
Honestly, it's no rougher than anywhere else. In neighborhoods, I'd actually say it's probably less rough than some other countries and some other places, but honestly, I loved it. You know, overall amazing people, really some of the nicest people in the world, I loved it. I moved to London. I mean, we're going back 50 years now, right? Moved to London. Same thing, really liked it there a lot too, no complaints, man.
I got a question for you. My buddy Frank, who's Scottish, when he talks to me sometime, I can't understand what he's saying. I'm honest to God, it's like, I didn't know haggis and all that. I mean, he was telling me about haggis and things, but I can't understand him, especially when he's talking to somebody from Scotland, one of his friends. Honestly, it's like hard. Is it hard for you or is it just me?
Well, there's some parts of Scotland where I'm doing double takes as well, right? I look at the guy like, what? Mm-hmm. Like, what language are you speaking? From some parts mm-hmm. of Scotland, right? Where there are real thick accents. But even in England, there are parts of England where you do a double take as well. You know, the you know, so when you start looking at parts of Newcastle and Durham, you know, some people talk and you look at them like, what?
Is it true when you're in, like in London, they can tell what kind of class you're in based on the way you speak? Is it true? Do they really, is that, because I lived in London a while myself over by Paddington Station. And I remember my friend said, we can tell, you know, what part, you know, what's your social status based on where you're from and how you speak. Is it true?
Yeah. There's sort of a very sort of what I'd call a superficial truth to it, right? You know, it's real, but it's superficial, right? There's this accent, the Cockney accent, you know, and the perception is that people from Cockney accents are poorer, sort of members of the underclass, all that kind of thing. But the reality is that some of the most successful people in England, class, you know, some of the nicest people that you'll ever meet, like you know, are Cockney, right? You know, so there's this really sort of what I'd call a superficial, you know, perception. Yeah, you're probably a little bit tired, you know, the perception will probably change over time and all that kind of thing, but there is a real, I'd say historically it was a pretty real perception, you know, but I think it's becoming more superficial and it'll change over time.
So when you're going down through, you know, so you've got this, you know, Crossform Midas, this pre-IPO fund and pre-IPO companies working with, you know, investors include, you know, people from places like Facebook and LinkedIn, Robinhood and Morgan Stanley, et cetera. So what was the idea that you had behind Crossworks, you know, putting it together, and what kind of companies are you looking at right now?
So it was a bit of an evolution, Gary. You know, I knew someone that had a company and, you know, wanted some help, right? So there are a lot of people who knew, they knew that I'd done investment banking, I'd been involved with a range of companies, and they'd just constantly approach me and say, hey, you know, can you look at my deck? Can you give me advice and all this kind of thing? And I just did it. But some people sort of, you know, wanted, you know, a little bit more of my time, should we say. And I sort of thought, well, you know, why don't I put an accelerator together? Informal, you know, not sort of one of these like Y Combinator, Techstars types of things, just really informal with people that knew me. And I knew people that just, again, from being an investment banker and from having invested in some companies, I knew people who I thought, you know, could be good informal advisors to these companies as well. So I put an advisory board together of a few people, you know, ex-CEOs, all that kind of thing, right? And as it came together, you know, one of my thoughts was about 12 years, you know, it might be 13 years now, maybe even 14 years, I can't remember exactly when, but around the time that Facebook was thinking about going public, you know, I'd taken an interest in this idea of the fact that there was much better access to the pre-IPO stock of Facebook. You're pretty new, but it took a company the size of Facebook to cause what I'd call this interest in private markets, and also access to private markets for people outside of an Excel, or a Sequoia, like those, you know, the titans of early to mid stage finance, right? So I thought, wow, you know, there must be other companies like this. So I hired a team. I hired a couple of guys out of Piper Jaffray, which had really good tech research back then, and said, look, I'd like you guys to look at private tech companies, you know, and see, you know, just go and understand the market, you know, let's not worry too much about monetization, but let's just understand the market, because something's happening here, right? you know. So that then we thought about doing a fund, but the timing didn't feel right. So move forward about 9-10 years. You know, I've got this accelerator. I've got some of these advisors. You know, people are, there's an energy that's developing. You know, and I thought, well, you know, what if we focused? What if we sort of reignited this focus on pre-IPO companies? Because of course, the market had now sort of grown and expanded. You know, still not what I would call one of the big core sort of central private markets, but then people like First Boston and Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley were writing research where they would touch on the market and they would touch on how they felt the market was growing. You'd look at things like indices of risk and indices of return and how secondary markets were lower risk, higher return relative to major indices, right? So relative to the Morgan Stanley Capital International Index, relative to the S&P and all that kind of thing. And I thought, wow, like, I wonder if among the group that we have here, there'd be an interest in sort of putting a fund together. And there was an interest. So then we thought about expansion and all that kind of thing and took some of the necessary steps that, when you're thinking about expansion and all that. And we built out an amazing advisory board. You know, we brought in to the advisory boards, the former CEO of Spirit Airlines, the former chairman of Playboy, the co-discoverer of Lipitor, which was the top selling drug of all time, just a range of really amazing people with the idea that we could look at the secondary market, the pre-IPO market, which is a relatively opaque market, by the way, but really bring just this real sort of high level seniority and intelligence to the market, right? So if we were interested in investing in a company, we could actually really understand. We grew the advisory board to about 70 people that are, again, all industry leaders. You're all just a real deep understanding, of a range of industries. And our thinking was, look, these guys are guys who have such a sort of nose to the ground understanding of what's happening. I mean, industries with supply chains, customers, potential strategic transactions, actually superior to an expert network, because most of them are investors in the fund as well. Mm-hmm. Right? So the thinking was, we can play in this opaque market at a very high level with great potential success, with the ability to potentially generate outsized returns, we started investing and we, I think over 2 years, we've invested in almost 30 companies with.
How many companies in total?
Around 30, it might be 29 or something like that, but around 30. And then of course we have an additional 11 or so accelerator companies. So call it about 40 companies, quote unquote, under management. Of the pre-IPO companies, there's a median last round valuation of over, I think it's around $4 billion, certainly over $3 billion. So very significant. Mm-hmm. And really amazing companies. Of them, around 11 or so, I think, are either direct AI companies or are companies that are able to take substantial advantage of AI in their core business model. So not just operations, really, the entire business model, and we, we've done kind of core foundational investing, when people think of picks and shovels, when we think of core investing, we think of super picks and super shovels. So the things that are one way or another you're using, right? It's been really phenomenal. There are companies, it's always risky to talk about the companies that you've invested in when the exit hasn't happened yet, right? It's always you always sound really smart when you talk about companies in hindsight, right? So but there's a few companies that I like, and I you know, you never know what happens, but there's a company called Cerebras that we invested in, just amazing CEO, company that I like a lot. You know, it's in the high risk sector of semiconductors, you know, one of the most complicated spaces on earth to develop in, but also one of the most important sectors economically, geopolitically, etc. You know, but Cerebras, fantastic company. They built the most powerful AI chip in the world, if not the most powerful chip period in the world, more powerful than NVIDIA's A100 chips. Really like the CEO. They fulfilled in 1 year some like $100 million order just from one customer. And that is, that's likely to be around, under about $1 billion, you know, when it's all said and done, you know, but amazing CEO, amazing company. We've invested in databases. We do a lot of enterprise software. Enterprise software and AI are two biggest themes, you know.
What's your average tech size, Steve? How big of investments do you make?
You know, so we're all over the place. So we're raising a fund now where we'll deploy checks, probably around 5 million, you know, there are two core things. One is that, we love recurring revenues, right? You know, we love high margin recurring revenues with really good product differentiation, right? So we want to know that your product is so competitive that you can hit an 80, 90% gross margin, right? Mm-hmm. We want to make sure that, you know, that if that you're not, we're not a big fan of companies that are susceptible to the interest rate cycle and all that. Obviously all the other things have to be in place. We want to see that you have a lot of customers that it's a real market, not a BS market, right? You know, but the, you know, but if you have, really high margins, high growth, strong product differentiation. We have quite a few companies that are, well, within SaaS, they're volume-based, not user-based. So meaning that once you start using the product, if you grow your use of the product, you know, you're on a metered billing, plan. So you're investing, you're spending a lot more with them. And, you know, we have a few companies in our portfolio where they're rocket ships. I mean, their growth is amazing, right? So, if you look at our portfolio as well, you'll see that a lot of the companies that we've invested in have first class, early, mid-stage, even late-stage investors, right? So these are guys that really understand how to build companies, you know, or really understand how to partner with management teams to build companies. So some of the names I mentioned before, the Sequoias, the Excels, you know, the Goldman Sachs, Kleiner Perkins, you know, I think we're in a couple that Elon Musk is in, you know, we're in quite a few with the strategic. So we're in a couple with American Express, and with, you know, just a range of the other guys, Koch Industries, you know, so our portfolio is really a first-class portfolio. And something, and this is, you know, this is a timing thing. I don't want to say this is our expertise, but we've been able to invest in these at a 50% discount to the last institutional VC round. You know, and that's more an issue of timing than anything else. Typically in our business, we're investing in a premium, but timing has been on our side, right? So it's really been fantastic. Really been fantastic for us. I have to say this just for regulatory reasons. Everything that I'm saying, and I think that Gary's saying in this call, is not investment advice. You know, investments in private companies are illiquid, they're risky, they're speculative, with the risk for loss of all capital. So as you listen to this this interview, this is one of the most important things that will be said during this interview. And also, it's always good to speak with your financial advisors, attorneys, all that kind of thing, in connection with any investment decisions that you make. But this show is not investment advice. This is a discussion among friends.
Yeah, no, you're right about it. I mean, the situation is there's opportunities all over the planet. You know, intellectual capacity is evenly spread, but opportunities are not. And so if you can find those diamonds in the rough, those interesting companies, and you're right, you gotta make sure that you go to your financial advisors and your lawyers and everybody else. But that's, startups are where it starts, right? I mean, you get the Facebooks of the world, you got the Twitters, you've got the NVIDIAs, they all came from someplace. Yep. The key is, to figure out, which is the right company for you and which is interesting. So, but that being said, though, that's an exciting part of the market too, isn't it? You find these companies and it's like riding rocket ships.
Oh, it's amazing. It's amazing to see some of these companies take off. And one thing I'm going to sort of say something a little bit naughty here is, when people look at their portfolios today, there's some companies that obviously really stand out, right? Like these are the Amazons, the Microsofts, the Apples, right? These are companies that, if you'd invested in them, 10 or more years ago, you'd be making, these were very smart decisions to make, right? And mm-hmm. and a lot of key signs were there as well. In the new world, I'm defining the new world from the point of view of AI. In the new world, I'll say two companies that are private now, but that I think. I'm actually going to mention three because one of them is already public, right? But the three companies that really are foundational to AI Google I'm counting Google as one. They've got Google DeepMind and Google Brain, foundational AI companies. And then the two ones that are private that these, in my opinion, will be the big, these will be the Apples and the Amazons, if not bigger, are OpenAI, which everyone kind of knows about, GPT. We got involved with OpenAI years before they even had ChatGPT, by the way, and also a company called Anthropic.
Yeah, I know the Anthropic guys. Yeah. So when did you get involved in OpenAI? What year was it?
So I want to say that we got involved with OpenAI at least 2 years before they released ChatGPT. We got involved with them because it was a little bit of serendipity. I'd seen something that said, I'd heard this, the news, there's this thing that Elon Musk is involved in, and it's absolutely amazing. And no one really sort of, people in the industry knew about it. I had an interest in it because, I had a general interest in AI, but we emailed them and said, hey guys, we'd like to take a look under the kimono. They said, sure. I looked at this thing and I just knew that this is, again, way before ChatGPT, this is going to be revolutionary, right? So I put a team together and said, hey guys, I'd like you to spend some time working on this and to see how we could use it. And then I sent a few messages out, this is something that we'd love to invest in. At the time it was a nonprofit and had the politics of the relationship between Sam Altman and Elon Musk and all that kind of thing. So, that's one of them. When you're in 20 years time or 10 years time, when people look back, you'll see where OpenAI and Anthropic are.
Yeah, no, Anthropic's amazing. Yeah, they've done an unbelievable job too. So listen, we're coming up to the top of the show. So if you could say out there for the startups, what's the one thing that's really important for them that sometimes they overlook in terms of, you know, building an incredible company. So what would you say? What's your words, the word of wisdom, Steve's words of wisdom?
You know, so, I'm really a late stage guy, to be honest. You know, I don't think of myself as being a great early stage guy, you know, but when I look at products, you know, you can tell products where the CEO really, really, these guys, they love their customers and they listen to their customers. They iterate well and they have differentiation, right? That you can, mm-hmm. you know, I can spend, I'm really good at doing sort of CEO interviews, right? So I can spend, I can spend 10 minutes talking to a CEO and really have a good sense. I mean, you've got to do a lot more than this, you know, but mm-hmm. really have a good sense, you know, as to where the company is, you know, the early stage, you know, you've got people who they tend to gravitate towards their comfort zone, which is, you can't do that, right? You know, again, I'm not much of an early stage guy, Gary, but I am a late stage guy, and the people who really listen to their customers are really good at iterating, really good at focusing on value proposition and differentiation, you know, and are phenomenal at execution, right? So, mm-hmm. so amazing team builders, amazing at organization structure. These guys are generals, right? You know, those are companies that we like.
No, that's great. You know, and Steve, so what's the best way for people to get a hold of you? What's the best day? LinkedIn, email? So,
yeah, email. So there's two. There's stevo@lsvp.fund. So it's our new fund is going to be called Late Stage Venture Partners. We love the name Crosswork, but we have spelling issues and confusion. Is it Crosswork? Is it Crosswork? You know, kind of thing. So next fund is Late Stage Venture Partners. So steveo@ lsvp.fund.
No, that's great. Steve, I want to tell you, I want to thank you for taking time your busy schedule. Sorry about the technical difficulties today, but that's showbiz, unfortunately, in our world, right? Things happen. And to all of my audience out there, thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us one more time. My name is Gary Fowler, and I'm the host of GSD Presents Silicon Valley AI and Tech. Stay happy. Stay safe and stay healthy, and we'll be back to you again soon. Yes, Steve.
Hey, Gary, I'm just going to say thanks very much. It's always good seeing you. Let's love your energy. You have an incredible, incredible network of companies globally. Very hard to do. Your relationship bench is really deep. So thanks for bringing me on.
Yeah, no, those very kind words. Thanks, Steve. I really appreciate it. Take care of yourself, and I hope to see you soon. Thank you.
Thanks, Gary.